Hello, thank you for joining us once again. As you know, we have just finished chapter 6 of discussing the Bhagavad Gita in the series entitled Gita Decoded. And Sister Denise was kind enough to share with us her thoughts and views on what this chapter contains. We will now go through the synopsis of the entire chapter to get the true message of what God intended for Arjuna and therefore for us. Sister Denise, it's good to see you again.
Thank you.
When I did an overview of chapter 6, the first impression that came to mind is that God is saying to Arjuna, you need to have a steady, stable, focused mind in order to be a yogi. Do you understand it correctly?
Absolutely, yes. The concentration of a yogi is all important, because yoga is represented by the steady flame, so there has to be no wind of emotion. Everything has to be stable and detached.
I like that expression, the wind of emotion. That's quite graphic. Sister Denise, you have known many people who have embarked on a spiritual journey, and so have I. Many find this effort to keep the mind stable exceptionally difficult, and it is even acknowledged in certain of the shlokas that this is not easy. What would you say to such individuals who are making effort but do find this hard because of the nature of the effort?
I would say that we have to understand that the mind is very, very subtle, and it moves with the slightest thought, the slightest feeling, the slightest perception. So the only way to achieve this is to continue the process of withdrawal, you know, withdrawal from the body, withdrawal from the mind being engaged in the senses. And then on the one hand, there's the withdrawal from the physical, and then on the other hand, really start focusing and creating, cultivating that connection with the Supreme Being, because the mind is equally capable of connecting to the physical or the non-physical, but it's used to working with the physical. We have to be very patient and not try and hurry it or rush it. We have to be very persistent also, and I think have faith that victory is ours. We just have to stick with it.
Would you say that chapter 6 gives a very clear description of what one's relationship with oneself should be? I did like the shloka on friend and foe.
It's very, very famous. You are your own best friend or your own worst enemy. So I think that the chapter 6 is really telling us, don't forget this, remember this. You can be good to yourself, you can be bad to yourself. It's in your hands. And what it also tells us is, don't try and blame anybody else. It's in our hands.
It's a foundational effort, isn't it, Sister Denise? I got the impression that although this has come up only in chapter 6, that you know, the preceding chapters may mention this in passing, this aspect is the foundation of spirituality or any spiritual endeavor.
I think the initial part of the Gita is about knowledge. So first we have to understand what exactly is what, and then we begin to enter into the actual process of the practice.
Sister Denise, what are the signs of whether you are a friend to the self or enemy to the self? The reason I'm asking this is because to give a name to something takes people perhaps a long time, because you can be something without knowing it. And I would like viewers to know what are the signs and signals of self-enmity, of self-friendship.
Personally, I feel that we have to be very patient. It's so easy to get frustrated. and feel that I'm not getting anywhere, you get irritated, and the desire to be successful, the desire to get it over with, to get it done. And this practice doesn't lend itself to that. So as soon as we start expecting too much of ourselves, then we might start to try and force things. Then we're not being kind to ourselves. Then we're moving on to the other side and being the enemy of ourselves. So I think the sign is this patience, love the self. You know, even though the self is weak, even though the self is impure, even though we are having a hard time going beyond certain of the delights of human physical experiences, but if you have decided this is what I want to do, of course you don't know what it takes when you start. And as you go further, you begin to realize you may decide, well, I can't do this. But it's not, I can't, we can. God is being very, very kind and saying, just, you know, put one foot in front of the other, just keep moving. And if you fall down, don't worry, get up, keep going.
Self-control and self-restraint are very much part and parcel of this effort that is contained in Chapter 6. Again, practicality. What comes to mind, Sister Denise, is that at every given moment, we have qualities that emerge within the self that pull you in a direction that's got nothing to do with spirituality. How do you hold on the reins without suppressing, without repressing, without harming the self in any way? How do you exert control without harm? That balance. Walk us through that.
A person who's riding a horse, especially a very fast horse, a race horse, you know, you have to become one with that horse. And the horse is going to go its way and get distracted and shy and all of these things. But the rider of the horse just keeps the horse going. But if you start being cruel to the horse, whipping the horse, whatever, then that is a relationship of antagonism. And we cannot do that with our mind. The mind will serve us very well, provided we understand how not to be abusive, how not to apply force. When you say control, it doesn't mean control by violence. It means to bring the energy of the mind under your jurisdiction and be the master, and the mind will do what you want and more.
Again, the theme of neutrality, equanimity, not being pulled this way and that is highlighted, which is part and parcel of self-control and being a yogi. If you are as neutral, if you become neutral as advocated in Chapter 6, what happens to your feelings?
When you say neutral, it doesn't mean there's nothing there. This word equilibrium, equanimity is good. It's more about being balanced. You know, when a tightrope walker or a loose rope walker is moving along, he has this long stick to keep him balanced. And these are the two things, the ups and downs, the positives and negatives. Unless we keep ourselves balanced, we can't move forward. We will be falling down. So it's not about being nothing, neutral in that sense. It's about being in such a perfect balance that you feel that you can practically fly. You know, so it's not a nothing stage, but it's what then enables you to go high, to go to the next dimension, to go close to God. So we need to have a different attitude towards neutrality. Neutrality doesn't mean I have no feelings. Neutrality means I operate on the basis of finer feelings, but I'm not pushed and pulled by the storms of passions.
So Denise, I know as you speak, I once again see this extremely courageous individual who wants to embark on a spiritual journey and embrace whatever is contained in the Bhagavad Gita sincerely. And so he is spiritually upwardly mobile, okay? And then the world and, well, his own dark side and feelings, negative feelings, and people around him and things around him also pull this way. Okay, it takes somebody of courage to be able to successfully manage that, doesn't it? How do you do both and do what you need to do here on earth for your own well-being and yet continue on your spiritual journey? What are the signs that you are doing it right? You may think you are, but you're not.
I think we need to be very positive always. There was one shloka in which it's mentioned that you are impartial in relationship to those who are for you, those who are against you. You're indifferent to taking sides. You know, when the mind maintains pure positive thought, no matter what the circumstances are, this practice enables you to be stable. If you go into positive negative, then you're in the swing of things and fluctuating. But you take everything positive, that positive angle or attitude leads to neutrality. Because you have to think, I think, that neutrality is on the other side of positive. So you have negative, positive, and neutrality is a step further beyond, not in between the two.
What you mentioned in the previous episode of being able to be with God all the time, based on, you know, the focus mentioned here, the concentration, the managing of your personality, etc., it sounds extremely attractive. How does one continually sustain the relationship with the Supreme in, and how do you know you're doing it right? Because it's in your mind, and your mind, you're taking your mind to God, and your mind wants to be in a thousand different places and not with God.
Well, not necessarily so. You see, you want God, you love God. You love what's within God. You want what God is offering you. Because whatever is needed to fill, whatever is needed to reach your full potential, God is the source of that. Wherever you love, your mind is going to go there. You see, if you worry about, am I doing this right? It implies that you're looking for some sort of approval from someone. So I think a yogi who has love for God is not concerned whether I'm doing this right or not, or even whatever anybody thinks about it, not of interest. This is where I'm going, and I may have to face raw evil or my dark side, whatever it is, but it's all part of the process. So I include that in it. I don't, you know, find myself operating in opposition to myself, you see?
Sister Denise, you know, when you go through chapter 6, it's very evident the level of discipline that's needed and contained in this chapter that says this is what you need to do. A lot of a yogin's life is discipline. Love, there's the discipline on the one hand and the love on the other side. Which is, you need both, surely. But you're saying if you weigh slightly more on the love side, you're good to go?
You're good to go, definitely. In the Raja Yoga practice that we do in Brahma Kumaris, it's done in a very amazing way, because the first thing you do is look at stuff on the physical level. You know, you start to make changes in your lifestyle. You start to create a rhythm of living. You wake up early, you do things in measured time periods. You start to be vegetarian, you start to have time periods where you're meditating, you start to study, you see. So you're introducing a discipline and a rhythm on a physical level, and gradually it gets more and more refined, and ultimately the mental disciplines, the intellectual disciplines, rest on that practice at the physical level. And so you find that you have this very strong foundation, and it's very reliable. So you just go higher and higher, no matter how many storms and obstacles, and you may experience disillusionment. But then you ask yourself, you know, okay, disillusionment is an unpleasant feeling, but is it better to live under an illusion or what? And you say to yourself, no, I don't want to live under an illusion. I want clarity. And so you realize that what you want is actually the same thing as what God wants for you. So there isn't anything going against you. There is shadow, but shadow is only there where there is light. And so where you're encountering the shadow is because of the light. So even then, your attitude towards the shadow is, you include it, is part of it, and you move forward.
Tell me something, Sister Denise. The lifestyle that you lead, I like what you just said, that the lifestyle that you lead has to support your relationship with God. So if your yoga practice is not successful, then you've got to look at your lifestyle and what you are doing that is that may be sabotaging you. That's interesting, because a lot of people want to include God in their lives exactly as their lives are. And as we know, people do this, that, and the other that is not the same thing that God wants for them. Because if you look at throughout the Bhagavad Gita, that which is contained herein prescribes a kind of strict lifestyle, I would say. Or I don't want to use the word strict, a self-disciplined lifestyle.
The thing is this, you're getting an opportunity to excel at something which is desired by people throughout the ages. You're getting detailed instructions. You're getting all the support possible. There is nothing to stop you doing it. All you have to do is put one step in front of the other. And if for any reason you fall flat, dust yourself off, pick yourself up, and start going again. Even if you go back to zero, you still do that. And one thing that I find very interesting in this practice of Raj Yoga, which is very different from what I call conventional morality, there's nothing like guilt. You know, if you can't make it because you're not strong enough, it's nothing to feel guilty about. You just start again and build up your strength and go again. You see, it's nothing to do with feeling bad or feeling guilty, or what will God think, this and that. This is a very kind of human angle on it. And as I mentioned a few times, the anthropomorphization of God is counterproductive, because you're imparting in and assuming and projecting onto God various human weaknesses which don't exist, and then you're making yourself suffer because of that, which is all completely imaginary. So just start to understand who God is, how he is, what he is, and how he is drawing you towards himself, and allow that to happen, and leave behind all of that, what I call finger wagging. God is never going to wag any finger at you. You know, you've seen how kind Krishna is towards Arjuna when he is really getting confused and weak. He's not punishing or demeaning or anything like this. You see, these are very human traits, but this is a divine thing.
Mm. Is it Denise, evil? Do you find evil for the viewer?
Evil. Well, people are afraid of evil, and they think it's something. In the Gita, you hear the word Maya. And one meaning of the word Maya is something which is not there. And you can also see that darkness isn't a thing of itself. It is when light is missing. So as soon as you place light, there is no darkness. But at the same time, there is another way that you can speak about evil. Evil is, you know, negativity. So any kind of dark, shadow, negative emotion in one human being, then you multiply that and think of the totality of all the dark, unbearable, miserable, depressed feelings in all of humanity, and all the suffering and all the resentment towards that suffering. That accumulation is a big power, and it fills the atmosphere. That, you can say, is evil. If a person comes under the influence of their own negativity, then they're a victim of evil. But I think that we cannot say that a person is evil, you see, because a person is a soul, and all souls are fundamentally pure. But when souls get weak, when the light of the soul gets very dim, then that light is absolutely covered by darkness. So that lack of spiritual energy is what causes the human suffering.
Okay, Sister Denise, I think that we have to bring today's discussion to a close, unfortunately. Is there any last words that you want to leave the viewer with before we say goodbye to you right now?
I would just say that not to be afraid of the dark. You know, be light and carry your light with you, and just move forward courageously.
Okay, there you go. This is a very sweet message from Sister Denise, ending this discussion on Chapter 6 on a very loving note. Keep courage, because no effort that you do goes to waste. That is written literally in black and white in the pages of the Bhagavad Gita. So, Sister Denise, I thank you. We have a very clear message as to what Chapter 6 contains, what it means, how to apply it, and how to bring it to life. And the one thing that I do like is, if you consider yourself to be a child of God, and if this scripture is of importance to you, I think the question that you should be asking yourself is, how am I, the child of God, honoring the Bhagavad Gita? I think that is the question. And it's a very noble life to live. It's a very noble endeavor to make. So thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Sister Denise. And I do hope to see you for Chapter 7. Take care and goodbye.